Accession number 11377, Reel 10.
Mr. W. Bateman, Reel 10. What state of health did you have in China?
Well, the health was quite good. The climate was more like an English climate. You had the... We got there at the back end of 37. And we were there till nearly the back end of 38. And we sampled the winter. It was the snow. We had snow and everything, just like England. And then we had a summer climate, like in England. Two seasons.
Did you have winter clothing?
Yes, just a khaki. But we didn't have no what they call long johns. We never got them till we got the PE. The khaki, we had the khaki in the summer, the shorts. The KD, I should say, and the khaki in the winter. And the overcoats, we had the overcoats, the old-fashioned overcoats, and the long trousers, no long puts to put on. But we could come out in a dress uniform, if you had, in the blues.
You said that you were living in huts, I believe. Was it good accommodation?
Quite accommodation. That it was the same in England. The wooden huts, same sort of beds, same sort of like the three biscuits. We had different in Khartoum. Say we had the long beds and the spring mattresses, and they were like England, the iron beds, wooden huts. And there was two fires, central in one that I about halfway, they were divided more like a third. And there were these coal fires, these big, you stoke them up and just used to heat the water. There's no central heating or nothing in them.
What about sanitation?
Sanitation was earth, it was buckets. There's no flush toilets in Shanghai. And they used to get emptied. But there was flush toilets in the schools where we went to. There was flush toilets in there. But in the barracks, I can't remember. I don't think there was flush toilets.
Had the schools been accommodated, taken over by them?
Been taken over by the... See, with the war, there was no... It was more like a grammar school, it was. It was a great big building. The whole battalion was in there. And behind it was the detention centre, the regiment, and some of the signals, corps signals, and the regimental police.
Did you suffer from any bugs or lice or
no,
similar to
no,
what you had in India?
But no, we did, and we didn't have any suffering from any mosquitoes. We didn't have a mosquito net. But the trouble is, we had no beds. I don't think we had beds in Shanghai, in the Union. We slept on the wooden floor. Just a mattress on the floor. But when we went to the barracks, we had beds. And when we went on to what they call the outlying posts, to duty, were these camp beds. These beds that folded, you could fold them up. They canvas beds, you know.
Were you getting mail from England?
Yes, it used to take me, I think it was nearly 6 weeks to take. I don't suppose there was no air mail there. Can't remember in any air mail. I used to write home about once a week. Nearly sometimes you used to get maybe three or four letters at a time. Because I think in England they used to accumulate them up and then get them all a big batch and then just send them out by the boats. Because I think myself, the P&O liners, I think they went to Australia, I can't remember now. They went from Hong Kong down to Singapore and then to Australia, and they would chuck the service mail to Hong Kong and China and that onto other boats.
Were there any British civilians in the concentration?
Yes, there was. There was some. The police, the Shanghai police, was also English lads on the Shanghai police.
Did you have business people in there as well?
Well, we can't remember. We didn't have any contact with any business people. They kept to ourselves. But we never went on route marches. There was one thing about it. We did only the biggest march was maybe about 2 miles to walk out to the. And there was no such a thing as like it was in Bombay riots and anything to go out to.
Sport? Did you have any sport?
Yes, we had sports. We had but football. You could just play football on the square, on the drill square. It was mainly football, wasn't it? There's rugby. I think there was rugby there, but I never played it. Colonel Mayer used to play it and that. But where they played it, I don't know. I think they went down to the American playground. The Americans had a big field there down there where they were.
Did you have games against the other countries?
No, we just have between the companies or inter-platoon matches and everything like that.
Was this still on a weekly, daily basis?
Well, yes, on a weekly one. But on the night time, late nights, time or say Saturday afternoon, we'd have a game. Maybe another platoon of the company in the company, such as the bandsmen, or the buglers, whatever it was, the buglers. Sometimes a team, the whole second platoon used to go and divide itself in two teams.
You said you were at Shanghai about a year?
About a year.
Then where did you go?
And then we moved to start to go up north, up to Tientsin and Peking. Now we split. Now, when I was in Shanghai, me and George Sparrow went on a port climber course with the Royal Signals. And we didn't get to know till went to the. And instead of being a round pole, it was a square pole. And I had to learn these climbers. Instead of being the loop climbers, it was the spike ones. And we spent, a fortnight. Learn to climb this pole. And I says, what did you say? We're going to climb this pole for. And he says, you'll find out. And when we finished, he says, right, oh, he says, Sparrow will stop at Tientsin and you, Bateman, will go to Peking. You're going up to the Peking Embassy. Because when you get up there, you'll find there's a sound line from the embassy down to the consul. One single line. Comes down the all the way down the railway on telegraph poles down to Tientsin. But there's a far journey from Shanghai to Tientsin. I can't remember it very well. I know we got on the train at the port. Which port we got off at, I don't know, because when you went to Tientsin, you had to go get off the main boat there and get on the river boats. I can't remember that. But I can remember getting onto a train to go to Peking. And it was quite nice. The journey up there, it took us 12 hours. And it was more like green. There were green fields, there were rice fields, and there was ploughed fields and everything like that. Some grain fields. Woods and all, they were wooded. But it wasn't as good as England. No. And Peking Central Station, it's quite a nice, it's a smashing station. But all steam trains, there's belch smoke out, talk about pollution of the air. So we went down into the embassy, and I've showed you the photograph of the embassy barracks. Quite good. So they said, right away, I was going to be attached to the Royal Signals. There was a Royal Signals radio station there. It used to be in communication with rugby. And there was how many of those? Two mechanics control the transmitting station, and there was one who was a sergeant, who was a full corporal. He wasn't a sergeant, he was called the foreman, he was a foreman in the Royal Signals. And there was five, One, two, Jamie. There were six Royal Signal privates. Signalmen. Mm. They operate the station.
And what was your job there?
My job was to maintain the inside the embassy. We had what they called an omnibus circuit of 110 ringing telephones, and it went right from the signal office into the order room, went right round each at the gates. There was the back gate that was and when you went out the back gate of the embassy, it faced the American embassy. Then there was the front gate, the guard, what do we call it, the north gate. I've showed you the north gate there. And there was a phone there, and then there was a phone in all the company office. And there was a phone into the embassy itself. One the phone, and they all, and then the guard room. There was one in the guard room. And this on the west side, they had a telephone, and there were so many rings for each, because you wanted about omnibus circuit right round, and you used to ring one for the order room, and there were maybe six rings for the one of the guard rooms, and that was all. It wasn't Earth Return. That was twin wire. It was Royal Signal wire. It was two wires. It wasn't Earth Return. Because this generating one wouldn't work very well on Earth Return.
And was that a better system?
Yes. Well, it was more like sometimes it used to break down, that you just have to go and maintain the telephone, like, or they would, maybe somebody would stand, use the phone, you'd breathe heavily in the microphone and wet it all up, and they couldn't understand them. And then the batteries maybe would get run, you'd keep the pestle switch, you had what they call a pestle switch, you know, to speak, you had to press this pestle switch and speak it and release it to listen. Sometimes it would get stuck down and run the battery, because it only had a 3-volt battery in the telephone. And that was, I had a Chinese coolie with us. He used to go around with us. And also this sounder line went out of the embassy and went on poles out there, and then went underneath the railway line, all one single line, and then it ended up by going onto the railway telegraph, onto the top, very top of the pole. You've seen them in England, haven't you, with one pot on top of the old-fashioned ones. Well, this one was right on the top all the way, and it went right to Tin Sin. And that was my job, to maintain it halfway down the line, and the lad spatter from Tin Sin maintained it up that way. So we had to have a passport and a photograph. We got that done, and the Chinaman. Then I said, what about the Japanese? Oh, they says, you'll be all right with the Japanese, as long as you've got your passport and everything. So we used to, first time we went down, we got a warrant, a pass, from the embassy to travel on the train. I forget now, I can't remember the station we went to. So I met Spatter down there. So we had a talk. So we went up the pole, and if any wires was, the Japanese used to tap in on it. If there was any on there, we had to cut them off. So what we did, we had a talk, Nate and George, we had some sandwiches with us. So what we did, when I came back, I would walk to the next station up the line and going up an odd pole or two, just check it, or put me at a detecting monocular, see if there's any T's on it, and then we go to the next station, and then by the time we did that, it was time to go back to Peking. We get on the train that came and get to the station. Now, next time, and he would do the same back over. And then that used to be up, and we used to do that twice a week. We used to go where we got off the last time, we'll get the train to that station and walk back. Each time, all the time, till we eventually got back to Peking again, and then it would start all over again. And by the time we got back to there, well, up that pole, the Japanese had connected up again, because it was a sounder line, And also, you know, the telegraph line, you know, the sounders, clicks, clicking the birdies. But also, the signals could switch it over to what they call a buzzer. They could send it faster. Sometimes, if there wasn't any interference, sometimes a lot of interference, on such as wet weather and everything else. It was a bare line all the way. See, it wasn't a covered wire on the top there. And you used to get this, the sounder, you used to all like click, and the earth come on, it would start clicking. So what they did, they used to switch you over to the buzzer, and you used to send the buzzer down the line. It was quite interesting now, because they used to send all cords from the council in Tenzin up to the embassy, and we had three of the lads there from the signals, Jackie Close, there was Johnson, and who was the other fella? I can't remember him now. And they used to take these messages to the secretary in the embassy, and he would decode them, write to a player, get to write, and then he would re-record it again, and then he would phone up to send an orderly down, and would bring it back and take it to the transmission station. There used to be great Bulgarians in the embassy there, and then they used to the man in the generating room used to had his machine, and he used to punched on tape all this code, five figure code, and put it on the tape, and then he used to take it up to the transmitter station, he used to throw his machine, and he used to automatically send it. And then you could hear it going through, like, read it.
So life in the embassy then, was it improvement on what you'd done before?
We couldn't go out. Sightseeing was lovely there, speaking. Wednesday afternoon, we had half day off. We didn't have a pretty style of me, because we were what they called self-employed. We had nothing to do with the rifle company. Only thing we was get up here. And decided to, they said, right, we'll go down the town, like. But there was Japanese in the town as well, eh? But there wasn't much there. There was some bars, some beer bars. There was a billiard room. And there was only one cabaret, and it was out of bounds. Till later on, till we got settled in, then they put it in bounds. Because the Americans went there, was going there, this cabaret place. It was in the Chinatown itself, like. But there was one or two bars. There was some white Russians there used to run bars. And there was a regimental brothel there. And there was a bar there where the Japanese used to go in. But we used to boycott that, I don't know, because there was Japanese used to get drunk, and they used to sling, you know, them swords they had. We said we'd not lose our heads if we stopped with here.
Could the Japanese hold their drink, unlike the Westerners?
No, they couldn't. No, they used to get on top of the table. On top of the table, we went down one night, and we had a drink. It wasn't very strong beer, and it was nice. It was more like a Czechoslovakian Pilsen beer. And went in one night, and we had to be in banished by 12 o'clock. So I went in there one night, and I think we'd only been in about half an hour, and the Japanese must have been in all day, the officers. And they started jumping up on the table and pulling the swords out, and you could hear the whistling around this. They says, we're going to lose our, so we opted. We weren't safe in there. But we went into a billiard hall, and the Chinese girls in there, and you could pick them partners. So we says, oh, well, we'll have a give a snooker, me and Jackie Close. Went in there, myself, and we got a shot of our life. Do you know, they got a shot. We broke the balls away, and they took Donald Davis, and they just put them straight down. They were marvellous snooker players. This is always only game, I said. So we'll always have a bit of a game in billiards. It isn't any of the billiards any of the same, but we've got a few strokes. Like. So after that, we used to go down as we used to play among ourselves.
Was the climate different up at Peking?
It was two extremes. In the summer, in the winter, we went up there in the winter, and by just after Christmas, it was 45 to 50 below, and you weren't allowed out after in the barracks. If you went, there were all toilets, and that was in. It was modern, everything's like. And all central heating, all the barracks was all central heated. And the dining room and everything was all in the barracks and everything. But if you had to go to the toilet, you could go out, but you had to go outside at night time. And all the toilets and everything, wash things, was all inside the barracks. It was all quite a modern, quite good. And the sentry, there was mounted guards at the north end, and they had sheepskin coats on, sheepskins, they had long johns on, and they had long sheepskin trousers on, and big fur-lined boots, and he could hardly walk, the sentry, and he had great big woolen gloves on, and he only did 20 minutes sent to go, before he was to do 2 hours, 20 minutes, and he was taken off, another one would come on. But you still did the, instead of being the toes and four off, you had 20 minutes and the rest of the hour off. And then you should go back on again for another 20 minutes. There was only one sentry on. But it was only at night time because there was no guard during the day. It was only at night time. And like in India, we used to have a shotgun, but there we just had our only rifle. We still had ammunition. And so the day it was policed by the regimental police, like on the gateway.
Did the climate affect you at all, health-wise?
No, it was lovely. And there was lovely sights to see. We always, eventually, when we got established, after they'd been there, the Chinese rickshaws used to come up to the gate to take you down to the anywhere. So we. Goes out one day, like, and he says, I'll be yours, rickshaw, Johnny, now. I says, how come? But he says, I'll be here every time you want to come out. So all the time I was there, I had the same rickshaw. And he used to be there, I used to tell him what time, so on the Thursday, we'd have my own afternoon to go out, and Saturday. And Sunday, after church, we used to do a little church parade, because there was a local vicar there. In the dining room, and we used to go over there, and there he was stood at the gate. I said, he says, where do you want to go now? He speaks good English. I says, well, I want a nice sight, so. He said, I'll take you to the Temple of Heaven, and it's about 4 or 5 miles outside out of there. Then so I says, right, and I've got a photograph for you, there in the rickshaw outside there. So when I came back, like, I says, how much do you owe you? He says, 50 cents. That was half a dollar. That was 3 halfpence. And he was quite happy with it. And also in there, there was an old Chinaman. He did the run from Tientsin, during the Boxer Rebellion, to Tientsin, to warn them that the Chinese was attacking the embassy. And he's got a pension. He had a pension from the British government of 4 copper coins a week. And there was 100 copper coins to a dollar. In the Chinese, and he had 4, and he was quite happy. But he used to do some cleaning. He was like a cleaner in there to get some more. But that was his pension from the British government. And now I'll talk about the grub now. The food was lovely. We lived like more like a restaurant, because you had Chinese cooks, and in Peking, and it was all embassy stuff. And he used to get import also, and it was a lovely grub. He used to go down, it was more like going into a restaurant, into the dining room. It was all laid out, knives and forks, and plates, cups and saucers, everything. He never did a thing, just used to sit down in China and used to come and serve you. I had no washing up to do, like you did in Khartoum, no cups to take, no plates, anything like that. Just used to get up and leave, and they used to clean all of. We did. We lived like lords there. It was lovely.
Did you have to have extra emphasis on your clothing and appearance because you were at the embassy?
Oh, yes. The civilian, when we got a civilian suit, we were allowed civilians, and we had to go in front of the CO, and CO to inspect them, inspect you before you got a civilian pass. Mm. Also, with the blue, when I got that blue, even I got it made by the regimental tailor, the company commander had to pass it to walk out. Mm.
Was there much in the way of ceremonies that you were involved in?
Not in Peking. No, there was very little ceremonies there, because I was more like Sam Pompard with the signal. Mm. And they had the old alpha. When the sound line, if it only broke down once, the line to Tinsin, it wasn't on my end, it was on Jordi Spatter's end. And they had an old-fashioned transmitting radio wireless there. In one corner was about a great pile of batteries. They'd be all charged. And it was all Morse code, no speech. Mm. And they used to squeak and a squawk. And sometimes they couldn't get through with it. Mm. It used to take about half an hour to get all tuned in. Mm. But it was nice watching we used to go over to the HX8. Because when they used to transmit to England, they always put the sign out, HX8. It was transmitted on the 31 metre band. And we used to listen to it, and many times we used to listen to rugby coming in as well. Mm. We used to try and read, because they used to send 25 words a minute from the Royal Signals. They could send a reading, but a bit too fast for us, with regimental signals.
Mm. Did it make you homesick, hearing
no.
signals from home?
And also, our mail used to come by the Trans-Siberian Railway. That's what they said it came like, because it, I think it only took 3 weeks. Mm. 3 weeks to come from England to Peking.
You're away from England, of course, and things were beginning to happen in Europe.
Oh, yes.
Were you getting any inclination?
No, I missed out when we were in Shanghai in 1938. We stood by to be mobilised, you know, when he marched into the Ruhr in 1938 at the march. We packed everything up and were ready to move. And then we stood down again. Of course, all our civilian clothes was all packed in our boxes and everything. And we're on standby all the time, ready to move. And then we got stood down.
What were your thoughts about that particular episode?
We never thought, no about it, huh? So, well, we'll end up somewhere. Didn't know where we'd end up at, like.
Were you kept abreast of what was happening in
Yes,
Europe?
Yes, we were quite abreast. And often used to read the papers. There used to be English newspapers out there. And some of the lads, then there was a bit of trouble in with the Russian border, you know, with the Japanese. And some of the lads says, hey, have you heard this? He says, the Russians have massed a million men on the Mongolian border. Because a million men in them days is a lot. Because there's only 600 of us in the battalion, in the peacetime battalion. 600 at the most.
Mm. Did you have any thoughts that things were happening that might involve you in war?
No, we didn't realise. I was due for demob. I was going to get demob 6 months before to my time. See, and I was in getting ready. And was it to finish in England in November, 1940? I was due, so I'd have to do the extra year, say, we'd been after November. And I'd put in for, with being in the signals, I put in for a vocational course to be the post office telephones, to go to Slough. And it was all ready thing for us, like, this is all, you'll go somewhere in about May next year. And, but war broke out. And, But we used to go sightseeing, and there's some lovely sights in Peking. Yeah, it's marvellous to watch to see them. We used to go that. We often go to the Temple of Heaven, and there was when I first went up there, there was we went there and there was we didn't realise it then, and we heard these voices. And we says, "Oh, hell's shouting there! But somebody's got a big mouth." And you know, it's a wall, and it stretches for half a mile, and they call it the Whispering Wall. If you speak whisper at one end, it comes out the other end like a loudspeaker. And there was some Chinese talking to the other end. They were talking in English. Mm. Also, there was an English language on the Peking radio. We used to listen to the radio there. And there was a girl on there, and she spoke perfect English. And we said, "Bah, I would like to meet her." Like, and one of the lads in the score signals, "When did they?" She says, "You'd be surprised." I says, "Why?" Like, she says, "She's 58 years old." And did you know, she had a voice of a girl of 18, and was perfect English. She'd been brought up with an English family, and sent to England to educated. And she had a lovely English voice.